cover this.
Yeah, I need a job.
You needed a job.
I needed a job, and I was without a job, and I wanted to stay here in the Twin Cities, and I wanted to do something that appealed to me, and so I thought about this, about a women's organization. It was a peace organization, and I talked to Mary Ann, and she was just immediately thought that was a great idea, and she wasn't working, and she had various jobs from time to time with mental health agencies, and she had started, okay, and she had also formed an organization called, it's got a very long name, Organization to Prevent the Detention and Death of North Vietnamese, but anyhow, it was to prevent the death of South Vietnamese. And she founded an organization that really formed was the basis on which Amnesty International later then formed the organization.
Really?
It was her concept that they copied.
Really?
And the concept was this. They had names of people who were alive in the jails, and they would publicize those names. And so the government knew, must have been the South Vietnamese government, they couldn't just kill those people because the names were out there, floating out there. And so once those names were known, these were people who were in the tiger cages. You may not remember that they were.
Vaguely, yes.
So as a result of that, thousands of people's lives were saved. And so then Mary Ann herself was in North Vietnam and was friends of Madame Ben, who was in the government. And so she had also been active. She told me that during World War II, that I don't know, her husband was in the war, and there was something going on there where the wives were really upset about it. So she called a meeting here in the Twin Cities, and she thought that maybe 20 people would come up, would show up, and I think it was 2,000 women turned up, and who were concerned about what was happening with their husbands and boyfriends in the war. So she had a history of doing this, so, and she's very, very competent and energetic. So I didn't know the women up here, of course, because I hadn't lived here, just her. So she called women together. She called a bunch of them. There were about 14 of us, and we met for a period of about 6 months, meeting for supper and talking about what we wanted to do. And then finally there was a man, I've forgotten his name, who came up with something. He was important in the organization, but she found a space. In the meantime, we decided that, I think I told you this, so that we would write this letter and send it to all the people on our Christmas card list.
Oh, yes.
And so we got enough money in for to rent an office for 1 month and to pay the salary for 1 month. So we decided to go with it. She found this office down in Hennepin. So she was the first director, and she worked, and then I was on unemployment, so that I would work every day there. And so there were two of us, and there was just one salary being paid. And then eventually, she and I were the co-directors, and we didn't have a clue as to what we were doing. We knew what we believed in, which was that the policy of this country was warlike and militaristic, and that we could again be in a war like Vietnam any second. And so we started off, we had annual meetings, not annual meetings, but monthly meetings, and they were kind of a bore. And let's see, what did we do? Our first meeting, this is kind of, was told all the time. Our first meeting, we said that we would never have a meeting without an action.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a meeting over, our first meeting was over on University Avenue. And it was 20 below that night. And there was a ball game on. And they had called off schools and everything else, but we said we had to have an action. So the cars were coming from the ball game, and we had our signs out, Women Against Military Madness, and we were demonstrating. And there was a reporter from the New York Times who was there, and he wrote about it, and so it was in the New York Times that these women were out in Minnesota in 20 below weather protesting the war. So we thought that gave us a great in. So we started, then we eventually got had a newsletter, and we had conferences, and we never, it took us for a long time to have a mission statement, and it was mostly instinct. We really didn't know what we were doing until after we did it, and then we kind of analyze it and say, well, that's why we did that. So that was right, and we have a mission statement, but we don't have a political statement about, let's say, a position on the Iraq war, what we feel should happen. We don't have a position on the Middle East conflict because we want everybody to be in there. And anybody who says they're a member of WAM is a member of WAM. And their membership, if they pay money and are on mailing list, they're a member. And the other thing was, I had been in organizations where only one person, especially politics, only one person speaks to the media. That person has the right to speak to the media. So we said anybody can speak to the media. And anybody can say their WAM and speak. And then if the rest of us don't like what we said, we can then say to the media, she said this was what she, but this is not what I think, and I'm a member of WAM too. And we've never had any problem over that. We've never had any problem, and we've never warned people, don't dare say WAM said this or that. We've just gone with it. So we have never, in analyzing it, when I talk about it, I have analyzed it. I say that we did it, and I think I told you this before, like a church supper. That the women get together, that I've observed it over the years, that women plan a church supper, and they get together in the basement of the church, and somebody looks at the person next to her and says, you make wonderful gravy, you make the gravy and the potatoes. And somebody says, well, what do we have? And they say, well, you know, something else. There's no organizational chart. There's no division of labor. It's just all kind of decided easily. And then if somebody slacks, the women will know it and they'll hear about it. So it's done, and it's done easily and without an organizational chart. And so that's pretty much the way that we have worked, is that we have, when there has been an issue that we felt, if there's been, we've learned over the years, let's say right now, for example, if the United States, and it's part of this, so hard to talk easily about this, we work in coalitions with so many other groups. And we do believe that because of WAM, that other groups have formed. We do not consider that they are in competition with us. There's a group called the Anti-War Committee. And this is people much younger than we are, college students, and a little bit older. We support them. We don't give them money, but I individually do. I support them. I have given them money because they want to do their own thing. They don't want to do it the way we do it. So, but we think that's fine. We need everybody in the business of working for a peaceful world. So we have decided after the fact what we do. And I was going to mention, for example, if we attack Iran, there is a policy now that if Iran is attacked and it's in the middle of the day, that there will be a demonstration the next afternoon. But if it's attacked and it makes the morning paper, then the demonstration is that day. And let's see what else I can say. We decided early on, we don't have a lot of money, so we just, the money that we get, we raise, is to keep the organization going. We do get grants, but we don't get grants that are corporate grants. The corporations understand exactly what we're saying, because I think more and more I hear women saying this, it's the economic system. I think if we took a poll, we'd find that most of them say that because the corporations have, are doing things all over the world that repress people. And if the people in many of these countries had the right, they would rise up and kick the corporations out. So there has to be a military, whether it's the U.S. military or whether it's the local military that is funded by our military. So we see it, I think I can speak for the group, that the system is the problem. The system is why there's military madness. It's because of the capitalist system. Now, whether the capitalist system could be modified so that greed and power are not the motivating factors, but I don't know. I don't know. Communism is very dogmatic, and I can't see that. A form of socialism, probably. But it's very hard, you know, because we're so evolved technologically, and there's so many factors to be considered. I was just reading an article. Where was it? And because I cut it out, I was going to send it to somebody about how they were going to engineer a mosquito that would not, that could not carry malaria, and this mosquito would take the place of mosquitoes who do. Now, whether that mosquito would kill those mosquitoes, I don't know, I've forgotten that. But this was just part of the discussion, was, well, this is a new breed of mosquitoes the world has never known. That's going to be humanly engineered. What are we putting on the planet? What are we doing? Because we know the engineered crops. So that's it. Now, we've gone through some, you know, it's amazing that we've lasted 25 years because there have been many women's peace organizations that have folded. Just recently, the Women's Cancer Resource Center, which I was a part of and supported, folded. And that was because, I think, not enough. You just can't be having wonderful grants and getting money and doing marvelous things and not really paying attention to the bottom line. You've got to be aware how much money is coming in, where it's going, and that has to be of equal concern to your program. And we have always had that. Somebody's really watching the store so that there's money. And that's hard. That's really hard because there's never quite enough to go around. But it's been very satisfying. And when I've talked about it, I've said that we are very interested in promoting the idea. But we don't care. We don't want to be the American Legion of the Peace Movement. We don't care about being the biggest. Mm-hmm. What we want to see is the idea. So if a woman's, I use this, church group came to us and said, how do we do it? We'd say, great. And we would help them organize, having nothing to do with us, because we believe in the idea. So
would it be fair to say that probably if you were, two questions. I mean, you've never expanded to any other city or tried to.
No. Now, and there is something called Code Pink, which has now a women's group all over the country,
okay.
Which is national. But it doesn't do what we do. It doesn't have an office. It doesn't have staff. It's just kind of a movement.
Okay.
But they have mobilized the women. But it's kind of interesting because they've kind of weakened the message at the same time, because these women talk about, let's be for something, let's not be against war, let's be for peace. And we have very clearly said that is not our message. We are against war, because if you can be for peace and say it's necessary to kill people for peace.
Right. Yeah.
So, but we haven't had money to do that. If we had had an organizer, I was an organizer for Infact.
Mm-hmm.
I was a national organizer. I was a failure. There was no way I could be in Minneapolis without traveling all over the country and meeting with people and organizing. And it just doesn't happen.
You think, and are you in contact with other women's organizations of a similar nature in other big cities?
There's none like it.
There's none like it.
No. There are women's organizations in California. In San Francisco, I contacted a woman named Hazel Welshman, who belongs to WAM now. And they have a Women for Peace out there, but they meet once a month, and they just don't have anything like we have. And no place has anything like this. And it's just because the women are here. But it's also kind of indicative of Minnesota. There's something here that there are always enough people here that believe in the good things, that are willing to work for it, that will do it. I mean, I'll give you an example. I read for the blind a short time, maybe a year, and this seems far afield, but I had to learn how to read. And I thought, this is the most ridiculous thing in the world. I know how to read. But they had somebody, we took classes. This is the way you read. Now, when you come to the chapter, you do this. You say chapter 5. And if somebody comes to the door, you don't say, pardon me, I've got to go to the door. You stop taping. You know, we were taping them. Then you start up again. When you come to the to a chart, they told us what we had to do with a chart. They told us what we had to do with footnotes.
Sure.
It was all, and then they checked us. We'd read something and then they'd say, you didn't do a good job, shape up. Well, I stayed with it. But then I did get some tapes later done in other states, and it was amazing. The quality was so poor.
Huh.
You see, they had just really insisted in Minnesota on having a really good product, and I have really appreciated that. In almost anything I've done here, I have found that there are people who do believe in quality and do believe in doing a good job and who do believe in good things. And so I had the same experience that I have. And this is a far field, but I'd rather,
okay.
I when you told me about being with people who
right.
shared, that's just exactly the way I feel at St. Joe's.
Mm-hmm.
I sat there at the Seder meal, and I began to cry, because here are all these people, and all these wonderful words, and they believe them. I know them. They're not mad in the parking lot when you get in their way. So they reflect it in the way they treat each other, and it's really wonderful. So anyhow, that's that. Now back to WAM.
Well, let me just say, also as an aside, yes, but when the Mall of America was built,
yes,
there were comments from people that came from all over the country about how well it was constructed.
Oh, really? That's
the workmen took pride in their work.
Oh, well, that's interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And it is very well built. It's very well done.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what did you hope to accomplish? What have you accomplished, and what remains to be accomplished as far as WAM goes?
What happened is we have this group of women who are really concerned to work, and that in itself is important. The awareness of the need, and I look at them; they're the best people I know.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we said from the beginning is we want to work ourselves out of a job.
Mm.
We want the country to get to the spot where we're not needed anymore. We can just close the door and say we're done. And it has been really a good experience because it's been successful in terms of longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And the newsletter, we get a lot of comments about the newsletter being good. I know, for example, there's a group of Veterans for Peace here. If Nikki LaSorella hadn't herself come to the office one day, and she really insisted that these men had to be heard. These were Vietnam veterans. And they came back with poems and stories and letters. They wanted to share them. There was no place to share them. So she had a meeting over on the campus. It wasn't in the Newman Center. It was in one of those religious groups there, though. I can still remember being there. And the men were so eager about it. And so we kind of helped them along. And now they have their own organization,
And they still have trouble because they're not very organized. But it's a really good group. And now tomorrow, and they do things, and they're, again, I think everybody in WAM supports them. We want them to succeed. We don't want to see them. And so we're working for them. And so I'm in a committee.
Sit better here.
Okay, yeah. Is this chair okay?
It's okay. I just have to be more conscious of how I sit. Okay? So, we're talking about WAM.
We're talking about WAM, and you were saying in South America, the women that were organized, you made the comment that if you educate women in a country, that does more, produces better benefits or results.
Yes.
Because the men are going to tend to spend the money on drinking, perhaps, or whatever. They're not.
Yeah, right.
They're not really as quite concerned with the family, the well-being of the children, perhaps.
That's right.
Well,
and the economists say that too.
Okay.
And the man from the world. What was it? The World Bank, I think, says that too. So it's not.
Right.
It's not a kind of pie in the sky statement.
So then I asked you, well, is that why you?
You asked me that.
Women
against
America. No. America,
then I said no.
No.
I said it's because we wanted. But the history has been, and I think it still is, that women will, if you have men and women in an audience and you have a discussion, the men will be the dominant voice in the discussion. And the women will permit this to happen. They're not going to, this is generalization, by and large. And so I've noticed it. When men, if you've got a committee with four women and a man, he will dominate. And so we knew that if we had men in it, they would dominate the organization. And we wanted to do it ourselves. And so men can join, and they do. And men have, and they are in committees, and they're not, I mean, I don't think we really ever had any problem. I've had people ask the question, though. I had a young man ask me that, almost mad about it, that we didn't encourage men to, they cannot be on the board of directors. They could form their own committee, though, and do whatever they want to on their committee. They could get money from the organization. They could do anything they want to. They just can't determine overall policy. I'll tell you one more thing about that. In an audience where they take questions, man and woman, the people who will generally ask the questions are men. So if I'm in charge of a meeting and we're asking questions, I will say I'll take a question. Man, woman. And if there are no questions from a woman, then we don't take any. That's it. Because women have to be encouraged. And I don't know how much of this is intrinsic. I mean, there are biological differences. And men are stronger. And women are, especially during childbearing, you know, they have to depend on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much of that is biological.
So I'm just going to, because you've been answering the question, but I'm going to ask it again, just to bring out more things. So what did you hope to accomplish? What have you accomplished? What remains to be accomplished?
Well, okay, this is, we never set any measurable goals. We never said we were going to reduce the arms race 5%. We never said we were going to stop the B-1 bomber. Which
that's right, you did say,
yeah.
If it's a goal, it would be that we work ourselves out of a job. The door's closed.
Right, exactly.
We're not needed anymore.
But this is also, people have criticized WAM. How can you work without measurable goals? And when you're asking for money for something, what are the measurable goals? So the only way I could figure that out would be to say, well, we will distribute so many pieces of literature, we will appear at so many meetings, we will be at so many, we will have tables at so many events. Now, those are the only kind of goals. The job is too big. It's too big. This is like a, you know, a dinosaur compared to an ant. Mm-hmm. What we're about. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Okay. Do you see, so there isn't any new or different techniques or things you're going to try in the future that you, it's pretty much, you know, what you've
done in
the past.
Yeah, I think we do. I think we do give some thought to, and we talk about trying new techniques, new strategies. Well, I'll give you one. We've decided that we might, that we will, and I'm not sure just when, that we will demonstrate at the homes of the legislators. That instead of just going to their offices, that we will go to their homes. We will go to the neighborhoods where they live to bring the message home. Now, that's not that radical.
I don't know. You may get more resistance. You may get more police attention.
And then somebody else said, well, why don't we go to their churches? And I'm not opposed to that either. So, but there really is resistance when you demonstrate at churches. I think it's okay.
So let's just talk for a few minutes about the kinds of things that WAM has done and may continue to do. You do sit-ins in offices of the, sit-ins in old word. You go and occupy a senator's office.
Yes, well, but we also write letters. For example, our Middle East committee, we decided that we would, every month, this was my decision, we would write a letter to every member of the Minnesota delegation about an issue in the Middle East that we think is a bad, you know, pointing out the lack of equality and the bad conditions under which the Palestinians live, and that it would be current, that every month they would get a letter from us, from our committee. And we're doing it so far. I've been writing the letters. I write the letter, and then I give it to the committee, and they look at it and make changes. And that is an interesting process. There was once writers and poets, I think it was after World War II, maybe before, called the Black Mountain Poets. And it was in the Black Mountain College out east, a group of men mostly. And they were prolific, wonderful poetry. They worked together. And that to me, that you know, there's nothing that says that you have to be in competition even as a writer. There is tremendous competition among writers. There is a lack of generosity, as far as I'm concerned, and willingness to help one another. It's so personal and individualistic. But you might be interested in looking up the Black Mountain Poets, because I find that right now we're trying, this woman that works with, that puts out the newsletter, I had written an article about being in Senator McCarthy's office 40 years ago, would it have been? 68? Almost. Mm-hmm. And how I had been going through this stuff, I found it. I'd walked into his office, did I tell you this? And I had reminded him who I was, and because this was early on in our relationship, because I knew him fairly well. I'd said that I was there, that we thanked him back at home for his standing up against the war, but that we wanted to know why he voted for the appropriations. Okay. And he had voted for the appropriations. Well, he said, you know, we don't have an opportunity to vote for those before the men are in the field, so I can't vote, not give money to men who are already in battle. And my comment was, this has been going on for 40 years. That's exactly what Keith Ellison is faced with.
Mm.
That's exactly what's going on. Well, the woman who edits the newspaper, the newsletter, said, you know, I was going to write an article and take a little different tack with this. And I said, well, let's do it together. It'll be fun. So we are. I don't know whether, I don't know what she's going to do, whether I'll say something and she'll say something, or whether she's going to work them together and say, this was my comment and this is, but if you can decide that you don't need somebody saying how wonderful you are, and that, then the rewards are tremendous of working together,
mm-hmm.
even in writing something. And so with my letter writing, for example, that's really fun, because I seldom ever send out a letter on my own. I write now for Marie Brown, the same thing. She'll say, we've got to send a letter out. So I'll say, okay, I'll do the draft. Then she'll change it, of course. But it's good. It's not bad. It's good. It's too bad we can't work together more,
mm-hmm.
like that. So, okay, so where am I now?
Well, writing letters, sitting...
Oh, you were asking me what we did. Yeah. Writing letters.
Strategies.
To the editor, and I used to write a lot of editor letters to the editor, and I've got gobs of them, but they don't print them anymore. Absolutely don't print my letters. And Don Irish, who's a friend of mine, a former professor at Hammond, has had the same experience. They will not print his letters. I don't know why, but they just don't. So, but we will get printed. The Highland Villager will print anything I write, and the little newspapers will print, because they need stuff.
Right.
So we keep looking for little places that we can get our message out. So, what else do we do? I think I've told you, when the social studies teachers have a conference every year, it's called the Minnesota Council on Social Studies. Every year we have a table there, and we talk to the social studies teachers, and we always have a little quiz, and we hand it to them and say, you know, take it. We don't need to know the answers. The answers are on the back. But we have, not a lot of, but we have really good conversations. And that is one of the kind of fulfilling things, because you meet these really nice people, a lot of nice young men who are teaching social studies and who believe in what they're doing. They know. They've come and talked to us. They know what's going on. So we have, and then we'll propose a speaker. This year we had one of our members, and I have spoken there. I gave a workshop a couple of times there. And it was pretty well received. I gave the second one the second year, and that's no good, because they're the same people. You have to get a new topic.
Yeah.
And so now then we found out that there's going to be another social studies conference up in northern Minnesota, not too far up, but we're going up to that one too. Then one year you have funny things happen. One of our members was in a workshop done on the Middle East by a Zionist. And she was impossible to him. She was rude.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't want us to come the next year. I didn't know what was going on. And then they said we'd have to promise them that we would behave. And I said I didn't know anything about it. And then since then, we really, the people who run the conference know us and like us. And then once we even got the mailing list from and sent letters out to the teachers, but they haven't let us have the mailing list again. So what else do we do? We encourage people to do demonstrations. We put events on our calendar on our email calendar. We, you know, I show films. We have, when Marie started with the Iraq Committee, our WAM Iraq Committee has kind of evolved into a coalition. And so it does stuff in coalition with other groups more than
something
by ourselves. What else do we have? What other committees do we have? I've been thinking we've got to have an environmental committee. And I just don't know who will do it, because it really needs somebody that can give it special attention. I don't know who that's going to be. We don't have a committee that looks at the situations in Africa, and they're the most appalling anywhere. But we can only do what our volunteers,
the members of the organization feel compelled to do. That's how we decide what we're going to focus on. If somebody says, this disturbs me. We had a war toys committee for several years. We had mothers of fairly young children who were really upset about war toys. So they, you know, I think you've heard about what they did. They went into one of the big stores around Christmas and bought gobs of toys. And then they came back in and turned them all back in and just upset everything. The manager came out and he laughed. Isn't that funny? He said, I agree with you. They're no good. So he wasn't angry, but that was the action. But that died because there wasn't anybody interested in doing that. See? So we did have a committee that, I think we still have one, that looks at race relations, but that's not it. Then somebody came to us early on and wanted us to take a position on abortion. It's not our issue. I did not want to do that. Mary Ann did not want to do that. And actually, we were forced into it. The members of the organization said, this is not something you can sit back. This has got to be settled. So we came out in support of abortion rights, and then we lost some members. Now some of them have come back, and we've never addressed the issue since then. It was just rammed down our throat, and we don't have it on I don't think we have it on any of our material, our position on abortion. I think an argument could be made that we should, but we don't. So what else do we do? We have even taken part in labor issues when we see, because we see that part of it connected with land and the fact that workers don't get enough money and all this and that. So when I forgot how we made that clear distinction, but we had people that went down and that was one of them. Canine strike and farming in Austin. We were involved in that. And Indian rights generally, there have been Indian issues. I mean, we were fishing right on the beach, like, and somebody had to do this for a billion or whatever. So,
The light wasn't coming on?
I guess I didn't notice. So where should we go? Should we go back to... Let's just take up...
Well, let's try and go. Let's try and recreate it.
Okay. We talked about...
We talked about why... about women and... we started with why women...
Well, it's important to educate women.
Right.
Yeah, because... Yeah.
And I'd asked you why WHAM excluded men, and we said it was because you wanted WHAM to
you didn't want WHAM to be taken over by women. Exactly. And that really wasn't the primary, you know, that just kind of happened. We didn't start off the women who were there. Isn't it?
Yeah, it's going. If that light isn't going when you're talking, let me know. Yeah, I don't need you to stare at it. But
no, well, it's still going.
Hello, testing.
Okay, all right. Stop. No, there it goes again. It kind of comes on and goes off, though.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good.
So it really, we didn't start off saying, we don't want men running this organization. We don't want men in here. That was not